Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Gianna Rayburn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Hey there, bestie. I'm Lori Ami, your What to Read Next podcast host. Join me as we dive into exciting new reads that'll have you reaching for your TBR pile in no time. From gripping mysteries to spicy romances, we'll explore it all and help you find your next favorite book. So grab a cup of tea, cozy it up, and let's discover some amazing reads together. Hello, Danica. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me, Laura.
No copy to potty bear. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am the debut author of The Truth According to Ember. I am a citizen of the Chickasaw Nation, and I have an MBA from USC Marshall School of Business, and I have a little 2.5-year-old daughter.
Well, I love this so much. So first things first, when did you get started writing? Were you always a writer? You wrote stories like when I was growing up, and then just like you graduated or was something later in life? You're like, I need another escape for my life.
No, I've been a storyteller all my life since I could talk. Yeah. The first movie that I saw in theaters was Pocahontas. I was 2 years old. My father took me because I had a little sister. And we just had a little father-daughter date. And I was obsessed. I loved it. And my mom was like, yeah, you're Indian too. It's like, well, we said that. And I never saw a Native American before. And I was obsessed. I was like, I am Pocahontas. And so as my sisters grew up, I would have us play Pocahontas, and I'd like cast people as John Smith, and we would go on these adventures, and I started evolving from there. And then when I was 14, I started theater and improv, and I loved Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. And I had this dream that I would be on there, and so I would create these original characters. Yeah. And they like sketch comedy, and I filmed one of them for my senior project and it was ridiculous. And I would I would babysit like all the neighbors' kids.
Yeah.
And over the summer. And I created this thing called Backyard Comedy. And it was basically a ripoff of SNL where you had like the Weekend Update. And I wrote all these different characters and skits. And every kid had a skit, had a costume, and we performed for the parents. And then we had a lot of Barbies. And I wrote and acted and the Barbies out. It was called Barbie World. And it was like a soap opera. It was like this seedy underworld of Barbie. And I had like a toothpick with ketchup. And it was like, that was my special effect for like a stabbing. And one of the Barbies is like investigating it. And I only had Prince Eric at the time. Yeah. I had the one Ken doll where you could like shave him, but I don't know. I lost him after a while. We got him at a flea market, but or a yard sale or something. But I had the Prince Eric. And so he was like everyone's husband, boyfriend. And he played multiple roles. And it was ridiculous. And then in high school, with the improv and acting, I wrote one act plays. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have stable and consistent access to the internet. Yeah. And so I had no idea that fan fiction existed, like as an online community.
Yeah.
I was just doing it in my journal. Yeah. I was like, I love Star Wars. Like, yeah. I was obsessed. Still am. Oh, it was Star Wars. Prequel, because that came out for my age. Like, I don't like when people like drag it, because I really loved The Phantom Menace. I thought Padme Amidala was beautiful. And then I loved Attack of the Clones. You see the romance with Anakin Skywalker and Padme. And like, I have just been a romance really all my life. But in the opening of Attack of the Clones, Corday, her decoy, dies. And then she like apologizes for it. And I was like, well, you know what would be a great story is like, what happened to her? Like, what was her life before then? How does the lead up to that? And I was talking to my stepdad about it, and he's like, yeah, you should write it. And so I started writing it, and there's like too much Gungan and where she came from, her family, she's training to be a decoy with all these other girls who look just like her, who look like Padme for a reason, and her life in the palace when Padme was queen. And I never finished it because I didn't know what I was doing. And it wasn't until like I was older that I learned about like fan fiction stuff online. Right then I was not going to post the stuff that I was writing when I was in high school. So yeah, just always been a writer.
I didn't even know about fan fiction. I'm a child of the 90s, and I'm in Puerto Rico. So I'm not in the U.S., I'm in the Caribbean island.
And so I remember my friends and I, we used to write our own like fan fiction of Menudo. Like that's the telling of the times. Like let's talk about, it's not even the Ricky Martin Menudo. It's the next generation of Menudo. Because they changed their voice when they grew up. Like for, when they changed their voice, they changed the guys.
So I have no idea about that. Yeah, that's hilarious.
They have like, I think just like 30 Menudos or a little bit more than that. So
that would be like the best reality show is that like,
yeah,
getting all the Menudos together.
All the hell? Well, no. So I know the older generation of Menudo, the original ones, the ones that were the big ones, the 80s Menudo, they have gone on like tours and shows and stuff like that. I'm like, no, we're talking about like the 90s Menudo. After the scandal, after like there was like a whole big scandal that happened, and originally they were all Puerto Rican, and then they had to import the Menudos from the U.S. and other countries, because like not enough Puerto Ricans wanted to go. So we had multiple Menudos.
That's amazing.
So long story short, my friends and I, we just like wrote a story, and we were just like every day, we'll build the story, and we had this whole storyline of like how we're going to couple up each other with one of the Menudos. There's just five of them, we're five of us, and it was all these different things. I didn't even realize that was like our own version of fan fiction until I heard now on my 40s, like people were like, oh, well, you get one commercial fan fiction. I was like, oh, I've been doing this
doing it before it was cool, the hipster of fan fiction, right? Oh my gosh, that sounds like my journal where like nobody asked me to like dances or proms, and there was these twins, identical twins at my school, and one smiled at me, so I got in my head that he liked me, and then I was new at the school, so I asked my friend, I was like, who's that? And they were like, oh, and I'm not gonna say his real name, like that's John. And so then I was like, oh, he's on the tennis team. So I went to watch tennis, and he was like, who's this chick? Find out that he had an identical twin. It was the identical twin who smiled at me. And so in my journal, it was like, I wrote fan fiction of my own life of like, oh, yeah, our love story could have been like a total nerd dweeb.
I feel like it's like, I grew up to be a journaler and stuff like that. And I'm trying to write it. The reality is, like, there's something to be said about you writing yourself, inserting yourself in the story, and when you have free reign, and you can control the feelings. As type A personality who struggle with anxiety, the idea that if you control my emotions, and I can control when I can cry, when I can feel the feelings, it's like the ultimate rumination.
Well, I started doing that because I would only write my journal when I was, like, upset and be like, I hate my sister and I hate my life. Everyone's so horrible. And it was, like, so depressing. And then I started writing these weird stories.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
It is exciting. So I'm glad that we connected. So let's talk about The Truth According to Amber. When did you get started writing this novel? Like, when did you decide, you know what, let's give a rom-com a try?
Well, I had written two other books before that, and I self-published them. And they did pretty well. I took them offline. I wrote two books, and shocker, one of them was Jane Austen fan fiction. It was called Pride and Prejudice.
Oh my god, I need fun.
I know, and it did well. I just took it down. I was like, I woke up in the middle of the night, just so anxious that like the writing wasn't good enough. Like the pacing is very fast, and just going through the extensive editing with Berkeley and Penguin Random House, where Ember, like, my craft has just improved so much because I just didn't know about certain things. I just was writing to write and I liked it. And then I just put it out there because I just never thought that somebody like me could be a real writer or an author. I just like, oh, I'm going to self-publish it. Like I was self-rejecting. I was like, no agent's going to want me. Like, no, I'm not good enough. But they didn't do pretty good. They did pretty well. And I was like, okay. So I wrote, my first one was called Balancing Act. It was about a paralegal who was half Mexican, white. My dad's Mexican. He passed away. And so, and I gave her my grandmother's maiden name, and I was a paralegal at the time, and I had no idea about plot. So I literally was just like discovery writing. I was like, I don't know. And I was like, something needs to happen. I'm like, this crazy thing happened. And it was just absurd. But there's like moments of just pure like joy, that like the funny banter. And I wrote like a bunch of flashbacks. I feel like that's kind of the novice writer when it's like, this happens in boom flashback, because I gotta explain what happened there, because I didn't know what was happening. And then I wrote Pride and Prejudicial, and I tried to make it a diverse cast. So like Bingley, he was Indian American or British Indian. His dad was like a James Bond type actor, and his mom was Miss Universe from India. And then I tried my best, but like the Bennets were just white. And I was like, why am I writing this way? And it's because, like, all the media I consume were told that, like, white stories, white protagonists, like, those are the ones we're telling the better for some whatever reason. And it was 2020, and I was like, I want to write a Native rom-com. And I had started a different one, and it was a Jane Austen retelling of Northanger Abbey. It was called Northanger Medium. And I had the cover and everything ready, and there were two Indigenous characters. And my Captain Moreland, she was a medium. She could talk to spirits. Yeah. And this FBI agent came in and retold me, and he's investigating a case and, like, playing on the gothic romances that Catherine was obsessed with. And she's obsessed with, like, criminal mind and stuff. So she's thinking it's some, like, crazy case. And you find out it was, like, credit card fraud and stuff. But unfortunately, my father passed away in the middle of me drafting that. And I've tried to go back to that manuscript, and I just couldn't. And I don't know that I ever can. It might be, like, years down the road where I maybe just tried it again. But at this point, I couldn't. But it's 2020, and I was like, why don't we have any Native rom-coms? And so I was very adamant that this should be a movie. And so I started as a screenplay. And I was writing it, and I just wasn't getting it right. And I think it was the voice, because when you write a screenplay, it's more removed. And I just really needed to be in Ember's head. And so it was always Ember, and it was always going to be Donala, and it was always going to be this accountant with the IT guy. But I realized that I entered the story in too late. Like, she was already working there. And then I put it down for a couple years, because, like, going through losing my dad like that, just getting into the writing, I don't know, I wasn't ready. And then I started an MBA program and a new job, and I had a new baby, and it was 2022, and I was like, if I don't write this story, my life will never change. Like, I'll never live that dream. And I have a daughter now, and I want her to live her dreams. And so it was hard. And I wrote late at night, early in the morning, on the weekends, whenever I wasn't doing homework. And I stole every minute I could to get the story out. And it just flew out of me. Like, I just was like, no, she needs to get that job. How does she get that job? And I just really pulled from my own personal experience of, like, how difficult it was getting a job, checking the American Indian box and getting no results. And then I would check Caucasian, and I have the same resume, and I'd be getting interviews galore. And I was like, this is weird. What if I explore that in a rom-com setting? What if I give these experiences to Ember? And it just, like, it just 6 months. I wrote and rewrote that book, edited it, and then I queried, signed with my agent really quickly, and then we went on sub when it sold.
I mean, the rest is history. And now it's
now it's coming out in, like, 20 days or whatever. It's so soon.
Yeah, it's only out on my birthday, which I'm actually really excited.
Oh my gosh, happy almost birthday, August 6th.
Almost birthday.
Yeah.
It is very exciting. I love this. So I actually love this story. Ember, like, really, like, the lies that we have to tell, but the expectation that we have to assimilate to America, whatever it looks like. And so, and then seeing her, like, going through that process, that character arc, what was your process of, like, just developing the arc now that you know what you know?
Yeah. It's so interesting you say that, because I think themes and stuff happen. I realize what they are after I write it, because in the moment, I'm just like, I want to get these two characters to kiss, and everything is, like, conspiring against them, and I can't do that. And as I was drafting, like, I use Save the Cat Beat, and I do a skeleton outline, and I will put scene ideas on either a wall, or I have a poster board freeway, and I have divided into acts. And as I was drafting, things would come up. Like, she'd have a phone call, and she's, like, throwing her phone. She's, like, not answering it. And I'm like, well, why is that? Okay. I just subconsciously added this layer of conflict. And it was, like, her brother. And her brother's in jail, and he needs money on his commissary account. And, like, okay, how can I dive into that? And just putting a lot of my own lived experience and just being in the mindset of the character. And it helps that, like, we have gone through similar things. It's not a self-insert. I am not Ember. We're two different people. But when I was, I don't know, I guess it's like writing magic, or we all consume media and stories. Yeah. And so you're subconsciously coming up with these layered plots. And so I always knew there was going to be this blackmail, but I didn't know how I was going to execute it in the moment. I was like, it's got to be the big. And it wasn't working in an earlier draft. And my critique partner, Lauren, her name's Ellie Todd, she wrote the spoiler that came out a couple weeks ago, which is really good. Also has an indigenous hero. She was like, you need to, the lies need to keep getting bigger. She's like, they need to be more lies. And I had no title for this manuscript. For the longest time, it was just Indian rom-com, like letters Indian. I'm like, I'll come up with the title later. I just know that they're Native and it's a rom-com. Let's go. Bada bing, bada boom. And so she was like, this lie. And it took somebody else reading it, right? The full manuscript and being like, how can each lie develop? And like, they can be silly. You can have silly lies and you have big lies. And like, that's like really what clicked for me. And so I layered in a few more. And there were actually some themes where she's like, it's not working here. What's going on? And I was like, oh, it's the lie. And so I had to add a lie later or earlier in the manuscript. And then like those scenes ended up like making so much more sense after the fact. And so a lot of writing, it's revising. It's figuring things out as you go, workshopping. Like my husband, he built his own keyboards and computers and he'd be in the office late at night. And I would read back chapters to him and to see if my jokes were landing. And as I was reading, if I got a chuckle from him, I'd be like, okay, that's working. And if not, I'd be like, well, that's weird, read that again. And then I would like rewrite the jokes just to make sure it was funny. And I think that my analysis of SNL over the years and watching all the skits and seeing how it makes it tick. And also like I took screenwriting at Second City, so I got a little bit of like structure for jokes, like especially for sitcom jokes, the callbacks. So all that like is in my head, in my brain. And as I'm drafting, I wish I was like super awesome, like Tommy Orange or Reese Erdich, who like write these Pulitzer, like,
but you know what,
the works.
I will tell you something. As someone who has been a lifelong reader, I find, and I didn't struggle with a lot. Like the childhood trauma scale, I'm like in the higher end. And I will tell you, the world needs more joy. The world doesn't need more trauma, more like the scare and stuff like that. The world needs comedy. The world needs love. The world needs like an escape from that. And so what I value is actually like a good escape. Having, and I like comfort of knowing that there's going to be a happily wrap. There's not an ambiguous ending of like, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, I value, like, knowing, like, you know what? Everything's going to work itself out. No matter what strain, what journey, what aims, what all these different things, what conflicts we have, I value that. I also value the fact that I don't have, like, any sighting incident in my life. Like, there's no, like, major thing.
You were born. That was your
incident. I was born. And so the fact there's no, like, inciting incident, and like, that the world's going to collapse, the shoe's going to drop, it's actually healing. And so I really think this is just as important as, like, the Pulitzer Prize. I think this is just as important as the Booker and all those prize draw. It's like, the world needs gore.
Like, yeah, there are similar themes in Tommy Orange's work, but he's just a phenomenal writer. His prose is, like, next level. But because we write our experiences in with the Indigenous identity and culture, there's going to be things that like overlap, and we talk about things. And I was talking to my friend, she writes YA, and she's Muskogee, and she read my newest book. And she was like, oh my gosh, I have a scene with green onions and eggs that they're cooking. And I was like, like, it must be like, this has to be told. And that's why we're selling it. I'm like, it's also our culture and what we know. And anyway, I love rom-com. My whole point was like, I want to see our joy. I think with Hollywood, our story has been taken from us. And you see it even recently with Kevin Costner's Horizon and how much Hollywood will back like Taylor Sheridan and Kevin Costner. And this is no shade to them because obviously they're very successful and make really great movies. But you're telling from the white lens, that white cowboy manifest destiny, Western expansion mindset that we've seen since the beginning of cinema with the train robbery and the cowboys and Indians. Like, from the beginning of the inception of cinema, you've had the wrong stereotypical representation of Native. And even with how Native should look, with Italians in wigs and headbands to keep the wigs on while they're on the horses and the spaghetti westerns, and so people think that we're supposed to look like that always, and that's just not the case. And I wanted to show Native joy. I feel like that our resilience is that we're still here, we're still able to laugh even though we've been through hardship, and that we are worthy of being the leads of our own story. We're worthy of finding that love. And I wanted to show Donawa as being a well-adjusted hero, because this is told entirely in Ember's point of view. Yeah. And I thought, you know, that it could, just could have been a different story where he had something else that he's working on. Obviously, like the lies and the trust, something that breaks them apart. But the fact that he's well-adjusted and it's somebody that, you know, she could trust, because she hasn't had that, like, male, like, person she could count on, like, her father's in jail and her brother's now in jail. And anyway, I don't want to go on a tangent, but
it is, I think in some ways it's like, but giving her hope, but there are some well-adjusted men, we're giving her hope, like, it's not, it doesn't, just because your lived experience and your child talks your own way, it might not be the whole world, like, it's not.
Yes, well, it can be a different way. And I, growing up in an environment similar where there's like a lot of fighting and things, and so I didn't see a healthy relationship growing up with parents. And it took doing my work on myself,
yeah,
and believing that I deserve better, that I don't deserve, yeah, to be yelled at or abused or any. And I came to relationships early on, like, with fear. I was like, it's better, like, men to stay away from me. But then I met my husband, and he's a nice guy, and Donawa is the nice cinnamon roll guy, and I wanted to get nice guys. And yeah, I see guys the tips to be heroes. I think IT people are treated so poorly in corporate America. And she sees that life can be different.
Yeah.
But for her, she's believing this lie that she has to be different in order for her life to change and be better. And I loved writing that personal arc and journey and growth of her.
Oh, this is very exciting. So thank you for bringing this book to the world. Thank you for birthing this book. And give us this another perspective and another, like, reminder that life doesn't have to be one role. It can be a different way. And we can overcome things. You can overcome hard things. But they'll be nice guys in the future. I think I learned about healthy relationship romance. And, like, now I can see them because I think romance taught me what to spot is a green flag, not what is a red flag. And then be able to see it in my other relationships around my life.
That is exactly how I've been able to learn and grow as a romance reader, learning about consent.
Yeah.
And I think it's beautiful. Also, like, growing up in a very religious, conservative home, I had to unlearn things and, like, shame with my body, shame with my wants and desires. And I think that's why I think romance is so beautiful and wonderful and inclusive. And it's getting even more inclusive with all the diverse stories coming out. And I can't wait for what's to come.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about book recommendations. Do you have any books to recommend our listeners to pick up? You mentioned a couple of books already, but it goes a few more if you have.
Oh my gosh, I love reading. So I love Nikki Payne. I love Pride and Protest and Sex, Lies, and Sensibility. Sex, Lies, and Sensibility has an indigenous hero. He's from the Abenaki Nation. And my friend Ellie Todd, her book, The Spoiler, came out. It's a new adult romance. Tristan Ward, he is Monacan, so he's indigenous. And he plays hockey, and his best friend's little sister is Rose, and she has OCD. And the way she copes with that is she gets obsessive with watching, like, historical dramas. Mm-hmm. And so she loves going to movie rental stores, and she, like, will just watch the historicals to kind of escape from her life. And he will spoil the endings or spoil things coming up and find enemies to lovers, and she decides to get revenge on him. But then they fall in love, and it's so beautiful, and I love that book so much. I highly recommend just keeping it contemporary or, like, fantasy. Yeah, or
you can go whatever, just, all right.
Oh my gosh, okay.
But you want to go.
So when I'm drafting, I cannot read contemporary. I have to read something outside of what I'm writing. So I read a lot of fantasy or historical. Mm-hmm. And I found this old historical, it's called The Bride by Julie Garwood. And
yeah,
it is, like, so old. Have you read it? This rom-com set?
Yes, I read it. Actually, Julie came on the show before she passed away, and she talked about how she got those stories. Like, It's like talking to my grandmother. It was like such a delightful conversation.
Oh my God, I need to go in your archives.
But like honestly, like it's like hearing her talk about like how she got these like bursts of inspiration for these stories and this world that's created. So
oh my God. My dream. Okay, so I got my this is like such a tangent, but the reason I got a I got an MBA was because I had a CEO boss told me I had to do it or whatever. And then I thought, how am I gonna use it for me? Because if I'm going to invest this money and invest the time in myself, and my dream is to produce content, I want to produce movies and be a producer. And like, that's why I wrote this book, because like, I want to see more Indigenous stories stuff. But when I read The Bride, I was like, oh, I can adapt this. Like, I just had this moment of delusion, probably. But I was like, this is so amazing. A rom-com set in 1100 AD. Like, it's crazy. Highlander Scotland. But like, I just have ideas. I love it. So that one is so fun. I'll read that one. I'm in a slump or I just need to laugh. It's so good. And then for fantasy, The Assistant to the Villain. Watched those skits on TikTok and I was like, oh my gosh, this book. And of course it was number one New York Times. Sold so many copies. And it's so silly and good and goofy, but it's just like so decadent and indulgent. Like all the tropes you want in a lighthearted fantasy romance. And I just love it. I don't love that the second book comes out the same day as mine because mine's going to tell me. But I'm so looking forward to it because it left on a cliffhanger and I have to know what happens in The Princess of the Villain. So Hannah Nicole Maurer Bayer, my parents love saying. Anyway, I want her to be my friend, but like I've tried tagging her in a few things on like threads and it just ain't going to happen. She's too big for me. But I was like, can I get an early copy of that? I'm an author too. But what else have I got here? Laura Thalassa. I will read anything by her. She is a friend of mine. And Nina Kumar, So You'll Be Mine. Oh, book that's coming out that comes out the same day as me. So get it, obviously. It's called 4 Weekends and a Funeral. And it's my friend Ellie Palmer.
She came on the show too. So we're like,
we're just like the same. So anyway, I love her. So obviously, since you've heard this podcast, her podcast, get it. And if you love like Western, there's Marcella Bell. She has The Rodeo Queen and The Wildest Ride. They're really spicy, really good. She's a phenomenal writer. And then also Dani Trujillo. She has Lizards Hold the Sun.
Yeah.
It's an Indigenous contemporary romance. And there's a second one called With Stars Have Teeth. Sorry, I'm looking at them on my shelf back here. But stop where you can't see her. Oh, what else? Oh, I love Etta Easton. She has The Kiss Countdown. It's about an astronaut.
Yep.
Yeah, that one, I loved it. Maya Ariel, When I Think of You, like, if you want to laugh, like, the first chat, like, I thought it was a rom-com going into it, because I became pregnant with her with the same imprint, so I read it early. So I was like, ah, laughing. And it was, like, having me sob. Like, sob. I send her videos of me sobbing. And then she has me swooning, my heart racing. She is just a master of her craft. Oh, my God, I love her so much. Basically, like, you want to just
show your whole. These are great recommendations. You give us like a little bit of everything. Like there was only a little bit of everything, just enough to satiate until your next release. So it is all good. So after you read The Truth According to Amber, then you can go to launching all these other releases. So it's all good.
Yeah.
Tell us where you can find out why.
You can find me on Instagram, really. That's the only place I'm usually at, updating more. And my handle is my name, Danica_Nava.
Awesome. Thank you, Danica, for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Laura, for having me and your listeners. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Watch Read Next podcast. If you enjoy our bookish conversations and want more recommendations, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Also, head on over to the Watch Read Next blog for a list of books mentioned in today's show. Happy reading. Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? Watch Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyournextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.